This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable and fixed blade knives and game processing kits. Now, in my bag this year, I had the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit. It comes in a very compact, handy carrying case, and one handle has the replaceable blade knife and the gutting blade. The other handle has the saw that comes with it. So I use the saw to split the pelvis, and I use the gut hook to open up the cavity and the blade to start cutting all the stuff out, right? So it makes cleaning a deer very simple, very easy, and the knife is sharp. And if you've ever had to gut a deer with a dull knife, we all know how much that sucks. So take a look at the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit and head on over to OutdoorEdge.com and enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% savings on your purchase.
Welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast with your hosts, Nate Thomas and Micah Winstead.
How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. Andy is probably kicking himself that he can't be here tonight.
Yeah, he's going to be jealous of this one for sure.
We are excited for today's episode. We're just going to hop right into what we're going to be talking about. It's an information-filled podcast.
Yeah, a lot.
And I knew we were going to get it.
And we could have went on, and like we were said, we could have gone for another 3-4 hours. I mean, he's full of knowledge, but we had returning guests. I wasn't able to make it to the episode that he was on before, but your buddy Scott Wilper.
Yep, so Scott Wilper comes on with us today to talk about basically tips and tactics on turkey season that's coming up here in a few weeks once this releases.
I would call him a professional turkey hunter.
No doubt.
He definitely knows his way around the birds and stuff, and he goes through different scenarios. He gives us some calls and talks about that and all sorts of good information.
And what I like about listening to a guy like Scott is he's been there and done it.
Mm-hmm.
So all the things that he tells us are from experience. You know, there's a lot of really good turkey hunters out there, and they all have different experiences. And if I were a young hunter or a hunter like me that sucks at turkey hunting, I listen to people that are better than me.
Mm-hmm. And he's doing, I mean, it's not like he's got hundreds of thousands of acres or anything. He's doing it in 10 acres, 20 acres, you know. I mean, he knows what he's doing. So.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to have a lot of fun today. So I hope you enjoy the show. Before we get into it, we'll talk about one of our sponsors, Alps Outdoors.
Shout out to Alps.
Shout out to Alps. We just last week did a giveaway.
Yeah, so congratulations to the winners there.
Yeah, to the winners won. That won, they should be getting their stuff. They got, let's see, an EDC Ghost 30 pack.
Which I wanted one of those, man. I wish we should have kept one.
They got an awesome Alps hat and a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And there was a winner on Instagram and Facebook. So,
yeah, so thank you, Alps, for providing that giveaway for us. We really appreciate it, and I know our listeners appreciate it too.
We wanted to do a turkey season giveaway, and I guess it's a good thing, but they are inundated, and they just don't have anything right now.
I mean, yeah. I mean, they're selling out. They didn't have anything in stock, so we can't help that. You know, they can't help that. You know, I'm sure they've just sold that many, and so good on them for doing that. And I'm sure COVID and that stuff's got everything slowed down too on production. But anyways, we really appreciate Alps and our partnership with them. So
yeah. But, so if you're looking for other stuff, check them out, alpsbrands.com.
Yep.
And they got all kinds of cool stuff. But anyways, enough of that. Let's get into this show.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. I can't do it like he can.
This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. I know you guys are waiting to hear the show start, but we got something to tell you.
Yes. So it's just, we're going to call it a bonus round.
That's what we're going to call it.
Yeah. We have our episode, but before we get out, don't cut off, because I know sometimes everybody's, oh, well, the show's over. I don't need to listen to what they're saying. Make sure you stick around for a few more minutes. We got an extra little tip for you guys that we thought was really cool and that we wanted to make sure that we put on this show for you guys. So make sure you stick around and listen a little bit longer.
Yeah. We got done recording. We got to talking with Scott. He did something that we had to put back on the show. So you're going to get a bonus.
Yeah, it's nothing crazy.
So don't stop listening.
Yeah, just giving you guys a little heads up. It would be in your best interest to stick around a little bit longer.
All right, so I know you're ready for this. So let's get into it.
Let's do it.
With us today, we're excited to have a returning guest, a friend of ours, Scott Wilper. Scott, how's it going, buddy?
Doing good. How you all doing?
Good to see you again. Yeah. So anybody who hasn't listened to, gosh,
I think it was like 12 or something.
Or was it even that much?
Maybe not. I don't know.
It was one of our very first episodes.
I remember
episodes.
It dropped in May. Whatever. I think it dropped in
well,
May.
Then it was one of our very first.
Third or fourth one, I believe.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Anyway, to put a bow on this, we had Scott on our show and right when we first started this podcast last year.
I missed that one. I was pretty upset
about it. Did.
But thankfully, I get to come to this one.
Yeah. So with us today is our buddy Scott Wilper of Wilper Custom Calls. And we're going to talk about some turkey hunting.
Going to be hearing a lot of different calls
tonight. It's going to be a fun show. I hope all the stuff we do in this show today, it comes through on the speakers well.
Yeah,
or on the microphones well, because we're going to go through some tactics, some tips. Scott's going to talk about, going to do some different calling and ideas or things that he uses when he turkey hunts. And you know, full disclaimer, Scott's not pretending like he's the best turkey hunter in the world, but I'm looking at the wall behind me and
I think he's done pretty well.
I think he's done all right for himself. So
how many birds did you say you've got you're at?
Well, he's already got a grand slam.
Yeah, but how many total did you say?
No, you know. Well,
enough.
50.
50? That's pretty good. That's pretty darn good.
So that's kind of what we're gonna do today, but before we get into it, some people might not know who you are, so introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Wilper Custom Calls, too, before we get going.
Well, Scott Wilper and Wilper Custom Calls is just the company I've kind of started, me and my wife did, in 2011 or so, 2012, and just started building turkey calls, box calls. I've been a carpenter my whole life, and why am I buying these when I can make them?
Right.
And of course, 15 of them went in the trash because I couldn't get a sound out of them. But Yeah, there's a big time art to it, and they've just gotten better and better and better, and started selling them. So it just helped us out for vacation money and things like that. So, but yeah, build them right here one at a time, and it's not about the money. It's so cool hearing the stories and the passion. That's what makes me want to build them is the passion. I just heard a story 2 weeks ago. You know, there's one or two every year that move me. And I just heard one, like I say, 2 weeks ago that it's pretty moving. And that's why I build them. And that's kind of how it all started. But this guy bought a call, and I wrote on the paddle, "Can I get an amen?" I write something. Every call I build's got something written on it. And it's just to move people.
Right.
Anyway, he was in the woods, took a kid along with him, a troubled kid, having a hard time. And this was last year, and he called on my box call. Gobbler went off. And he turned and looked at that kid. He turned that call upside down where I wrote on that paddle, and he said, "Can I get an amen?" And that changed that kid.
I bet.
He can't get enough of it. I've actually mailed the kid a call now, and that's all he wants to do. He wants to hunt. He wants to turkey hunt, and he's staying out of trouble. And, you know, but that's kind of how we started, and it's just it's awesome building calls for people to, you know. You never know what another person is thinking or doing or
yeah,
what's going right. on in their lives, you know.
Right. So, well, and, of course, the first time we recorded together, you had just got done donating two of your calls to an auction for a friend of mine who passed away before that.
That's right.
And we come out and talked about that and talked about it was after the thing had already been done, but we talked about you doing that. And, you know, those are the sorts of things that you enjoy getting to do as part of this business. Hell, we're doing another donation for the first annual, which is going to be over by the time this episode comes out, but the first annual Bags for Bernie cornhole tournament that a friend of mine is putting on. Scott and I are, or Scott and us are donating some really cool items for that. And it's cool to be able to get to do those things. But so, yeah, we only got to record, unfortunately, last year after turkey season was over.
Right.
And from that day, I knew we got to talk to Scott again before turkey season in 2021.
Yeah, we got
to
do it right this time.
So people can kind of help get themselves ready. And
but, I'm ready now.
In the meantime, you had a heck of a 2020 over the summer and through the fall. We kept in contact, obviously, and
we
both had good years deer hunting.
Yeah, had a real good year this
year. So that passes the time. That's always nice.
Oh, yes.
So let's just kind of get into it.
Yeah.
All right, so obviously turkey season, when this show comes out, will be, hell, when will it be? It'll be basically a week from Tuesday coming up, so not far from today, that the day that we're recording this. So it'll maybe be a 2 weeks before turkey season
just
starts.
Just 2 weeks before here in Missouri.
And so we're going to basically talk about what you like to do at the beginning as the season's going. You know, you told a story last year about that one bird that kept giving you a hard time and, you know, how you might change as the season goes. But off the bat, I'm guessing before season starts, you're doing quite a few things the days or weeks leading up to.
Yes. Yes. I have
day.
I have a lot of cameras out, and then you know, coming home from work. It's as simple as going home the back way. You know, I come home from work today, going home the back way.
Mm-hmm.
And just I seen a gobbler cross the road 200 yards up from my driveway just because I came home the back way. But I'm always looking for him, a lot of scouting. And for the next 2 weeks, from now till season.
All of your clocks agree with us.
Yes, we've got some clocks going off here. Yeah, for the next 2 weeks or so here before season, I really start scouting really hard. Not by vehicle, but just a thermos of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to the three locations that I can hunt, and a thermos of coffee, and I'll just sit out there and listen. And then usually birds roost, you know, they'll, if not the same tree, right. A lot of times that does happen. It's, they like a favorite tree, but they'll roost in a general 50-yard, 75-yard area location. So, you know, I just listen, and that's big. Get you some coffee, go out and listen, and find out where their roosts are. I mean, that's big to begin with right there. Mm-hmm. Knowing you can have a $1,000 gun and a $600 blind and $300 worth of turkey calls and all this camouflage, and you're $1,500 in debt here, and you're going to go out and kill a bird, and you can have the best stuff in the world. It doesn't do any good. There ain't any birds there. You got to know where the birds are.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's big time is scouting. Yeah. Preseason, and it's as simple, anybody can do it. Yeah. Get you some coffee, get a chair, go out, sit and listen.
So what do you do, and I might be jumping the gun here, but I'm thinking about one of the properties that I have the permission to hunt on. I've never seen a turkey there in my life. Well, a few months ago, turkey started, before I pulled my car, my cameras for the winter, mm-hmm. Turkey started showing up on camera. And towards the end of deer season, they started showing up.
They're in their winter flock.
So, never seen them before. And I'm about 95% certain where they're coming from. But I know that there's almost zero chance that they're roosting where I'm hunting. What do you do in that situation? I mean, do you hope to find out if they're roosting close enough to where you have the permission to hunt and so that you can draw them in?
Yes.
At that point,
in a farm like that, them can be tough farms to hunt. They got to roost somewhere,
right?
They got to have trees. You know, if you got trees and some running a creek, some running water, and some trees, they can hold birds. You know, and it doesn't have to. You don't have to be 100 acres of timber. Just a thin tree line. Go out to Nebraska, loaded with birds. You know, Kansas.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of tree lines and a creek. So they got to roost somewhere. But then you're on that farm that, you know, I've got 100 acres and there's 20 trees total on the whole 100 acres, you know. And there's places like that. But yep. Turkeys will visit that area because there's food there. Maybe it's a strut zone, something like that. But knowing where they roost at, you're going to hear them on a good calm morning to get to your farm. You know, you set up on the wrong side of the farm. You got to know where they're coming from. So, yeah, they got to be roosting somewhere wherever, you know, your farm's at. So,
yeah.
Knowing that is big.
And I kind of got an advantage as far as one side of the farm, it's impossible for them to be there because there's nothing there for them to be. I know they're west of where I have the permission to hunt. And I have a good idea where they're at, but they could be 100 yards west. Or they could be 700 yards west. Mm-hmm. That I don't know, and unless I put them to bed or they're close enough where I can hear them gobbling of a morning, I won't know. So it's kind of one of them. I guess you go and hope they're there,
right?
But it is cool that they did start showing up out of nowhere,
right?
I haven't seen a bird there ever,
right?
Since I started
hunting. Your area might have had a real good hatch.
Hopefully,
you know,
yeah.
You know, overall, Missouri's been down the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You need a dry spring, especially around egg time. But, you know, a thunderstorm goes through, can hit my house, you know, and drop torrential rain. But 5 miles, just 5 miles.
Makes a big difference.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah.
They didn't get any rain. They missed 3 storms in a row, let's say, and I got hit 3 times in a row. So your area could have had a good population boost there, and that's why you're starting to see a few birds too.
Yeah.
So you know, there's different factors. Did crops change, you know, from a pasture to pasture ground to you know, crops?
Yeah,
that's big time too. Things like that can also change why they would come in there. But I would say a good hatch in that area, it's got some to why you're seeing some now.
Okay, so let's go. Let's do it.
Let's start hunting these things.
Yeah, let's start hunting. So, day before opening morning, you're probably going to go out that evening and put them to bed, right?
Yes.
So, you probably got a few different spots that you would probably hit, correct?
Yes.
And then, opening morning, you've pinpointed your birds. What is your setup looking like? Like, how close are you trying to get to that tree, or within range, or how are you setting up?
Especially before anything, you have nothing's happened between you and these birds yet. So you know opening, it's a clean slate for you, basically.
Open day, yeah, opening day, yeah. You're ready.
I'm guessing you take that different.
Yeah, they're uneducated.
Right.
They're uneducated birds right now. On day one,
yeah,
and they get smart quick. But yes, on morning one, well, anytime I hunt them, 150 yards is what I try to set up on them.
Okay.
Now, as the season gets a little later and there's a lot more foliage on the trees and leaves and, you know, the bushes are greener, you know, I will push that on into 100 yards. But they see 10 times better than we do. They will see you before you see them. They're in the tree, too, you know. So any movement they're going to see, especially early season, there's hardly any cover.
Yeah.
So, you know, I try to stay about 150 yards out and do some locating with owl calls is what I use mostly in the morning. Yeah.
Can you just come sit next to me? Because I'm not going to do that with my mouth.
I love it. I love it. But, you know, locating your bird. But, again.
You just tap Scott on the shoulder when you're ready. Go.
But if you've done your homework, you don't need to owl hoot. If you go out a couple weeks before season, drink some coffee in the morning, I already know where you're at. Mm-hmm. Generally, they are turkeys. You got to expect the unexpected. But generally, they're going to be within 50 yards every single night of that spot.
Okay.
Undisturbed birds.
Okay.
So, yeah, to start the morning off, and then, you know, I'll set up 150 yards out early. As the season progresses, again, you know, what direction do they usually like to go? I'll try to get in a little tighter, but I never get in under 100. I've been busted
way too many times.
Too many times to learn to not even do it no more.
Are you setting mostly up in fields to where they can come out and strut, or is it just depend?
Well, every farm is different. Yeah. Here in the area I'm in is, you know, it's mixed, 50-50, I would say, where I'm at here. My farm up north is mostly all timber. Mm. So, you know, it all depends. But, yeah, they do like to get down, get in a clearing. Doesn't have to so much be a field, but some kind of open clearing. They like to stretch their wings. They've been in a tree all night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to stretch it out. So, to get started and then start calling.
All right, so let's go through. What call do you usually like to start out with?
When I start, the first thing I do is I will start with a slate call or glass pot call, either one, but I'll do soft tree yelps. You have got to put – you're trying to fool this gobbler. He lives every single day. A gobbler has to win every day. You only have to win once.
Yeah.
He has got to beat sicknesses, bobcats, coyotes, humans, cars. I mean, just think about it. From an egg to an adult, everything's trying to kill him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to win every day. You only got to win once. So don't get discouraged if it don't happen right
so
off the bat.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
There's a chance. That's right. That's a good movie.
Oh, yeah. I can picture Jim Carrey right now.
I try to add so much realism to that. You're trying to fool this thing. I don't just sit there and yelp, yelp, yelp. 15 minutes. Yep. I mean, I'm scratching the leaves. Put as much realism into the situation to try to fool this gobbler to get him in range. But I'll start out with a tree yelp. Usually I'll do 3 to 4 notes, and you can just barely hear it. And all it is a yelp, but it's a soft yelp. It's called a tree yelp. And I usually don't do that on a box call. I'll do it on one of my slate calls or glass, but just 3 little notes. And all she's really saying is I'm awake.
And that's first thing, you know, first legal light. That's the kind of the first thing you're doing.
Yep. Just 3 soft yelps. I might wait 2 or 3 minutes, do it again. And on a calm morning, if the wind's not blowing, stuff like that, they can hear. Gobblers can hear good. If he answers you, don't do any more.
Okay.
You just let him know where you're, you know, he knows where you're at.
Right. I've heard that turkeys, they're like experts at pinpointing where sounds come from. I mean, I've heard like you could call, you could wait 45 minutes and they'll be right there on your lap or something like that.
Yep.
So
I had a guy tell me a long time ago, and you know, I'm talking 20 years ago, and I back his comment 100% now after being in the game as much as I have. He told me that if you were in a hole, 6 foot deep in a hole, and this gobbler's, you know, 300 yards away, and you made a call to him one time, if the gobbler was to do it, he would come, he know, he can pinpoint distance and direction so well, if he were to come in, that he would come all 300 yards and look down in that hole at you. And that is how they can direction. And so, you know, yeah, they're expert on that. Yes, I agree. But, yeah, just start off with a soft tree yelp. Kind of let him know you're there. You're telling him it's called a tree yelp because I'm waking up.
Mm-hmm.
You don't come jumping out of bed screaming. I mean, you're moaning and groaning to the coffee pot.
Right.
It's the same thing. You got to think like that when you're calling the birds. But, yeah, I'll start out with a tree yelp and, you know, just three or four soft yelps. I'll do it a couple times, and I'll wait. And then as the goblin starts heating up, I don't call to him. The next 15 minutes is hard.
Because you want to do.
You want to call. Oh, this is where everybody fouls up. Well, you want to keep calling.
You want that constant reassurance of, oh, he's still got one. Oh, he's still gone. Still got one.
Yeah. Let him gobble on his own. He's probably got hens around. There's an airplane going over. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is. But I usually don't make a peep for the next 15 or 20 minutes. We're really breaking light hard now. He could be flying down within the from now to the next 5 minutes or so. He's going to start flying down. Then I'll finally let out, maybe. If I do, I'll let out one yelp, you know, or a series of yelps, I should say. And that's usually with my box call or mouth call and box call at the same time. I'll even make it sound like there's two hens in there. But just 5 minutes before I think he's going to fly down, I'll let him know, hey. Four or five faster yelps. That's kind of an excited hen call. You're just, I'm getting ready to fly down too. You're just letting him know I'm here. And then I don't say anything else. Let him fly down. If you keep calling to a gobbler that's in a tree, he will gobble and gobble. If he doesn't have hens, he'll gobble and gobble and gobble.
And never come down.
And never come down. For a long time, he won't. He wants you. He wants the hen. That's what Mother Nature's designed it. The hen, I gobble, you come to me. And I'm going to stay in this tree until I see you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just getting daylight and daylight and daylight, you know, and all kinds of things. Let him hit the ground, and you can usually hear him fly out, or you can see him in some situations. But when he's on the ground, then I let him have it.
Yeah.
I start calling. I start cutting, doing a lot of – I'm excited, and I try to get him fired up, you know. But that's kind of how I start the mornings out. But.
Well, and one thing I've noticed, and I'll get to it in a second, but I want to go back and ask you a question. What is the reason that you choose to use your slate or your glass call first thing compared to one of your boxes? Is it just a little quieter? You can control?
Yeah, I can sound a lot softer, sweeter, a little, you know. It's just like I said, you wake up in the morning moaning and groaning to the coffee pot. You're not trying to be loud and cutting and excited like that, and usually you can get pretty soft
with those
with your pot calls, and you can get soft on box calls too, don't get me wrong, but that's just kind of me.
Yeah.
And it don't matter what you use, you just want to do it soft,
right?
You know,
but this whole time you are pretending to be a hen. You have not done anything as far as
I haven't done much besides let him know that a hen has woke up, and maybe a minute or two before fly down, yeah, it was what you heard. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just going to reassure him just one time with some yelps, and then that's it. You know.
And then the patience game.
Then the patience game. Now, when he hits the ground, that's when all kinds of scenarios can break out. That's when,
you got to get in this gobbler's mind. Is he with other hens? If he's by himself, things like that. So, and then you start your calling. But I'll move to box calls and mouth calls. I'll run a box call and mouth call at the same time a lot. Like you said, two hens. So. Yeah.
Are you using any decoys?
I was going to ask that, yeah.
Yeah, in the morning, in the mornings, or I say mornings, the first early part of the season, let's call it, I use a Jake and a hen.
Okay.
Gobblers are, they love to fight as much as they love to love. So, you know, a Jake, I can beat Jake up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it ain't so much I'm in love and coming to your calling as I can beat that Jake and take that hen.
Yeah.
So you kind of got two cards in your favor here. But as the season progresses, I've noticed I've been beat up. I've been kicked around. I've lost three fights, half a dozen fights. And I've actually had a nice long beard, several step out, and they don't want nothing to do with it. You're better off. That's just me. I like to run with a hen only as the season, later season. The last week, I just run a hen.
So you very rarely use like a strutter?
I don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
And I saw those, like, they've been all over social media lately for sale and stuff. And, mm-hmm. and
yes.
Some of them, my gosh, they look.
Yeah.
They look just like I might just shoot it.
Yeah.
Got one.
And they work. They work too.
Right.
I mean, you hear the story that they fly down on a tree and they see that full strutter and the guy's paid the big money for it and everything. And I'm not downing that. That does work.
Comes right over to it.
And they come running in to whoop it.
Yeah.
But I have had a lot. I've used them. I don't use them no more. They've come out, I don't know, 10 years ago, they come out pretty hot and heavy then. And, I bought into the game and bought a couple, and they have worked for me. So I'm not saying they don't work, but you could blow your ground out pretty fast. I've only got three places I hunt, and one of them is 10 acres.
Yep.
The other one is I live on 20 and half of it's my house, so I've got my back 10.
Mm-hmm.
I have small tracks here.
Small spots.
Yeah.
You blow it. You blow the game. They're not stupid. Fool me once, And
fool me twice. Well, but you're not going to fool me twice.
Yeah, you're not going to fool me twice. It's not happening.
We're really doing the movie things tonight.
So, yeah, it's just, I've had so many gobblers that I've worked, they're gobbling. Finally, I see him, and they step out, and it's a long beard. It is not a Jake. It's a long beard. He's got a great gobble, and he sees my full strutter, and he'll just turn and walk the other way.
So those full strutters might be better for King of the Hill.
Oh, yeah.
More than anything. So you get a good, solid long beard come down, and you might be done with them.
Yeah, dominant bird won't put up with it.
Right.
You're going to kill him with that full strutter all day long.
But the four or five.
The other four or five long beards that are underneath him in the pecking order, yeah. They're just going to turn and walk the other way.
And I'll shoot any of them.
I'd shoot a Jake.
Yeah. A lot of them will. And like I say, turkeys expect the unexpected. But
yeah.
So I don't use them like that. And another thing I don't do is it actually drives me crazy. I carry one with me, it's kind of a homemade fan. And just a fan I've put together, and I've cut it in half where it folds. I can fold it out. But I'll use it if I come over the hill. I'm glassing with my binoculars, nothing, coast is clear. I do very, very little moving when I turkey hunt in a day's time. I won't move more than 100, 150 yards total. If it's one of them hard mornings, 50-yard moves.
Yeah.
Maybe two times, three times at most, and that's it. But if you're going out, something like that, or during your move, if you get busted, you pop over the hill, there he is. I'll drop down and I'll throw that fan up and let him see it just to calm him down, pull it back down, and then I'll actually try to roll to the nearest tree or bush and set up and start calling. But I'm just trying to calm him down so he don't run off. But I can't stand, and it's fun, it's cool, but the new fanning that's going on, this new
where they have
the new fad that's out. I don't know, it's been out 6 or 7 years now. You see all these fans and these umbrellas and stuff. I get it. It is a rush.
Where they come right up to you and then
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen those videos.
But it don't always work. And again, you're going to ruin that farm for that season. You know, it's not like totally ruined forever, but you fan some birds and it doesn't work.
High risk, high reward, but also a real low ceiling on something like that where you mess it up.
And that's
it
not
could be game over.
Right. That's to me, I mean, you're turkey hunting, don't get me wrong, I guess, but if you're turkey hunting a bird, fool him at his own game by, you know, calling him in, making him lovesick, trying to trick him that way. But yeah, they don't even have turkey calls. They just buy a fan, and a lot of the guys I've seen on TV, they don't even wear camouflage. They're just hiding behind a big fan. Well, that didn't work. We run that gobbler off. Let's go to another farm. You know, and there you'll ruin your whole farm. It don't always work.
Right.
Yeah, very rewarding and pretty heart-thumping
intense.
When it does. Yeah.
Looks good on TV.
So the fan that I use is...
And don't get me wrong, I try just, it. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and I've done it. I've done it, and it's worked. But I've also messed up a couple gobblers, and I never seen them again.
Yeah.
You know, they'll move on. So
going back to the story we're painting so far, he's come down. You've kind of had that little back and forth with him. What happens if you – so we were talking before we started recording. You're probably one of these guys too, but there's a lot of guys and gals out there that they got to be at work at 9. And so it's 8 o'clock. He's come down. Maybe they can even see him.
Yep.
And they see him start working away from them. And me – just because I'm impatient and I'm not a good turkey hunter, I'd get up and go after them. And I usually, you know, 100% of the time, fail.
Right.
So what are you doing in that situation? Are you just going to attempt to keep speaking to him? And if he continues to work away, are you just going to say, I'll get you another day?
Yes, that's
how
pretty
much
I roll.
What you do.
Right. Just like the bird last, you know, we did that in June when we did that on the story I was telling you that on the bird, it was day 11, I think I told you,
yeah,
or day 12,
like
day 11 or 12, I finally killed this bird. But again, I had to be at work by 9:30, you know, and then some days I did push it to 11. I took a half a day of work.
Right.
But, because hens, you know, he's with hens. You can chase him down 9 times out of 10. They're going to see you before you see them. You're gonna blow it, and ruin it. So yeah, on the situation where it's 8 o'clock, he's answering me. Once in a while, he's answering me, but maybe it sounds like he's moving away, or you actually, like you said, you see them moving away, and that kind of deal. You know, I'll wait till 8:45 to the very last minute before I, you know, just me to push it to the max, and I go out. I mean, I take the. You got to plan your exit, plan your escape. I'll take the creek out or you know, the brush line or the ditch to get back to my truck, leave him alone. Your farm's not ruined. Come back and hunt him again tomorrow, you know. But you got to, every hunt, you got to ask yourself, why did they go that way? I mean, I constantly, every hunt, there's a reason why he went that way.
Yeah.
With the flock.
Okay.
If you can be set up in the direction they want to go anyway, it's a lot easier to call them in.
Yeah. Which you may or may not have the power to do. You know, it might be a situation like they come down, they start working away from you, and away from you somebody else's farm. And so, I can't go over there.
Right.
So now you got to figure out how to get them your way. So I'm guessing in this scenario we're kind of painting, when they start working away from you, what are some of the things you're doing call-wise to attempt to get him to make an about-face and start heading your direction?
Well, there's two ways to go about that. And it's all trying to paint the picture like you're saying. Get in this gobbler's mind. Constantly ask yourself why and what. Why did he do that? What's going on now? And, you know, to better yourself as a hunter. But this gobbler is gobbling to you occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
Every 20 minutes. He doesn't answer you every time you call. You know, I only call in situations like that, I only call 15 or 20 minutes, and it's just a few yelps. You don't need to keep screaming at him. But like you say, they can pinpoint direction. He knows where you're at. He can come down and look in that hole at you if he wanted to. So you don't have to scream at him. But I would call every 20 or 30 minutes, and I call it a check. I'm checking him. I'm pretending I can't see this. You know, you can't see this bird. So I'm checking him, and all I'm going to do is let out. I'll let out four or five yelps, just. And he answers me. Well, he hadn't moved. He still sounds like he's 150 yards away from me. And that's what he sounded like 30 minutes ago. Why? That's the next thing you should ask. I'll constantly turkey hunt, and you'll start learning. Well, because he's probably with a hen. Why leave the real thing
to come
something
to
squawking in the bush, you know, 150 yards away from me?
Yeah.
But then ask yourself again, why did he gobble at me?
What, she's not keeping him happy at home.
What's going on is he's giving you a courtesy gobble. That's what it's all about.
Is he swiping right? What's that on?
What's the wait one? Be like, maybe here in a little bit.
Right. That's what he's saying. He's just saying, I hear you. I'm busy right now, but I'm here. I hear you.
Okay.
So that is basically a courtesy gobble. And I just checked him to see where he was at. So, and then again, I'll wait 30 minutes, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and then I'll do it again. Now he even sounds farther away, you know. And usually a bird like that, if I can take a day off, or maybe I have the day off, maybe it's the weekend, and it's a great, perfect morning, you know, raining and windy and all that, I'm going to peel off and go to work. But if I think it might happen, I'll sit it out. That hen, he'll breed that hen, and she will leave. Or maybe she's already been bred, and he doesn't know it, but, you know, he's tagging along for the game. He'll spin around. He'll be in strut and spin around. And usually I've killed more birds between 10 and 1 than I have 6 and 10. I'd say 70% of my birds have been between 10 and 1.
Wow.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
That's because he spins around and strut, and then he spins back around. Well, where'd you go? She left.
Yeah.
Because he did breed her, or she was already bred, and she's going to the nest to lay her egg, you know. So now he's by himself. Well, that call I've been hearing over in the bush sounds pretty good now, and he don't want to be. So that's why every 30 minutes she let out a check, and then he courtesy gobble. 20 minutes goes, well, man, he sounds closer. He's coming now, you know, and I'll just keep working him with the call. And usually between 10 and 1, you'll kill him. So there's one way. The other way is if he's got – and then you got to have a hen to play along. But mimic the hen. Mimic everything she says. You can mimic a hen. But if she's – they're 100, 150 yards away. Same story. We'll start again. She's playing along with you. She'll yelp two or three times. Let's say she yelps three times. I'll yelp three times. You'll hear her yelp three times and maybe cut twice. I'll repeat her.
Immediately?
Immediately. Immediately. If she's playing this game, this is work.
So are you attempting to piss her off?
You got it.
Nice.
And it don't matter what call you use. Use the call, you know, pot call, box call, mouth call. Use whatever you're the best at, but mimic her note for note. At least a dozen birds I've killed because I've made her mad, mimicked her every note, and then it's hard. That's 1, 2, 3. That was 9 yelps. You know, you don't have to be exactly perfect,
right.
But, you know, it wasn't 2.
Yeah.
So she just did 8, 9 yelps, and then there was 4 or 5 cuts, and then 2 more yelps. And I'll put it right on her, and she will get mad, and she will turn to come to check you out. And then guess who follows?
There you go. That's smart.
And as soon as he gets under 50 yards, you let him have it. Because that hen will come all the way in, and I've had it happen dozens of times. That hen will come all the way in. She wants to fight you. What's going on. You have made her so mad. She thinks she's atop the pecking order. She's going to come in and fight you. She's going to come in 5 yards of you. They get that close to you, they're going to bust you.
Yeah.
Right.
And then game over.
Right.
So
I mean, enjoy the gobble and the scene and all this, but, man, when you're at 40 yards, you're done. Game over. But, you know, so that's the second way to go about it.
Either way, you're being patient.
Yes.
Which is, I would guess, and maybe I'm wrong, but I would venture to guess, a good portion of people listening to us, including me, I'm not patient. And that's probably why I'm a bad turkey hunter. Yep. I mean, I'm self-proclaimed, Scott. Self-proclaimed.
Patience
bad.
Is big time.
Yeah. In turkey hunting, I've never been able to be patient, and that's probably what's gotten me busted. That I don't hear that very often.
No. Are you ever mimicking gobbles or anything like that? Are you ever gobbling out there?
Yeah, I do gobble some. Again, I don't on public ground. I don't. Now that I've got a few farms I can hunt, I don't. But on public ground, I won't gobble at all.
Yeah, probably not.
Because you'll bring in hunters.
Oh, mercy, yes.
Yeah.
When they hear a gobble, they're going to come running at you, you know.
Just like I said, the guys like me are running after him.
You're right. But I do gobble some. You know, you can read a bird. That's another thing, too. A bird's head, when it's totally red, I mean, just knowing your quarry is big. Their snood that's hanging down and their color on their faces means so much. A lot of people don't know this. It's just little things I've learned. I'm a turkey nut. I mean, 99% of turkey fans, they have 18 tail feathers. Did you know that?
I do now.
Out of all my birds, I've had one bird that had 19, and I had another bird that's had 21 tail feathers. Just two of them. Everyone, they're, you know, 99% of them are 18 tail feathers. Just knowing your quarry is a lot of it. When their head is beet red.
Because it changes colors, right?
It'll change colors.
Yeah.
And usually it's, you know, it's not like 2 seconds, but, you know, within a minute, they can totally change colors in their head. A fully red head is usually aggression or mad or upset. I'm wanting to, you know. He doesn't like my Jake decoy. I mean, I could see him from 100 yards out. He's beet red, you know. I think he wants to fight, you know. They love to fight, too. So that would be a time I would gobble. You know, you can gobble on a box call. This is a 12-inch long box I make, and you can gobble on a box call. Jake, you are not going to gobble in my field. This is, you know, I'm the boss here. And that'll work. But knowing I knew to gobble because
his head was red.
His head was red.
Okay. Right.
If it's red, white, and blue. Or, you know, the white's sometimes hard to see on the cap of their head, but, you know, red and blue, a lot of blue, and you'll see white on their cap. We're in love. We don't care much about fighting, it's just love. So, you know, play the game like you should. Do some calling, some clucking, some yelping, play it soft. You know, he wants to hear the music. So reading a bird, their snood's the same way. When they're scared, usually when you'll know, you know, say he's 40, 50 yards out, and you're thinking, I want to get him a little bit closer, but he's starting to act funny. Their little snood will be 3/4 inch long, sticking straight up. That's a sign of he's a little weary. He doesn't like the situation. Something's up. He's figured something out. Something ain't cool here. But when they're totally relaxed and love and everything's just peachy perfect here, that thing's all hanging down 3 inches past their beak and hanging down. So, you know, reading a bird like that's big time.
Yeah. I didn't realize that their snood changed the size. I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. Within a matter of a minute.
I knew the color. I knew their heads changed colors, but I didn't know.
I have
that.
So many jokes I wanted to say right
now. Yeah, me too. I am too. I was kind of thinking of a couple. We got to keep this clean on the radio.
Keep it PG.
PG rated here.
Yeah. So, first time hunter, he's going out there. And you can pick how many calls does he need to be proficient at? What's one thing that he needs to master? Is it the cluck? Is it the, you know, the chirp? What would you say would be the top three calls he needs to get good at before he goes out there?
Half of a turkey hunter's skills, half of it is woodsmanship.
Okay.
50% of killing a turkey is knowing where they're at, doing your pre-season
scouting with a cup of coffee, you know, how to get in and out without getting busted. I mean, I hunted that bird for 12. I let two gobblers go that anybody in this world would have shot. Mm-hmm. I'm talking 20-pounders, 10-inch beards, you know, 1-inch spurs. I let them go because I didn't want to ruin that property. It was after that specific bird, that, mm-hmm. that double-bearded, inch-and-a-half spurred. Oh, boy, frustrating. Day 12, I got him. You know how I got him? Mimicking the hen.
Okay.
Just like I told you.
Yeah.
And it was a 30-minute ordeal. I mean, I had to – it was nuts. You know, every 5 minutes. I was repeating, finally, you know.
What are you doing, though, if – so everything we talked about –
I got off on a rabbit hole there.
Oh, that's okay. But everything we talked about, you know, you mimicked a hen or, you know, you read his –
Yeah, try to read the gobbler if you can see him. Try to read him.
You might be able to gobble. What about those situations, and you kind of showed us some stuff before we recorded. What about those situations where he's not giving you courtesy gobbles?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't give a shit about your Jake, it right. seems like. Or maybe you can't even see him. He's right. still moving off. Do you do anything like with the – you told us about crows earlier before we recorded. Is that a thing you're using – during hunting time, or are you using crow calls to maybe locate them to put them to bed of an evening more than anything?
The crow calls I'll use while hunting. And a lot of people, when they do crow call, you know, let's say that bird's, he's moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Let him go. Go hunt another bird.
Right.
You know, he's probably more than likely, they are expect the unexpected. That bird isn't going to mess with you for 2 hours. So if you have the opportunity or the area and lucky to have the land to do it, move over the hill. Go hunt another bird.
Mm-hmm.
But take the crow, use the crow call to try to locate one. And, like I was telling you before we started recording, when you blow a crow call to try to get a gobble, you're locating so you know where to move and set up. So many people will blow on the call, you know, 5 or 6, 7 times straight, and that gobbler goes off, but you can't hear it. You can't hear it over yourself making that crow sound so much. Well, they didn't gobble. And in reality, he probably gobbled once and sometimes even twice.
And you were busy.
You were busy. Yeah, having a buddy with you is great. Make him stand 10, 15 feet away from you when you do that. And usually he can hear it while you're doing it. But the way I'll get around that when I'm by myself is I'll hit the crow call just one time. And I'll pause for 3 seconds. Usually they'll gobble right after that first note. Pause for 3 seconds. Then continue with 2 or 3 notes after that. And that's how you can hear it. But it'll kind of be like this. I don't know how that come out on the speaker.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Yeah,
but
we'll find out.
You give him – it gives you time to hear him.
Exactly. That's all you're doing.
Instead of just 10 right. straight seconds of crow calling, and he gobbled at you, and you don't know it.
Right, right. I'll just kind of do one real long, hard blast. You don't want to pause for 30 seconds. You're just pausing. Usually he'll gobble. It's a shock. You're shock gobbling. He's going to go off, like you were saying earlier, that clap.
Yeah.
With the pet turkey made him go off. That one first note that's a hard blast, 90% of the time the gobble's going to come right after that first note, 90% of the time. So that's why I'll pause 3 seconds, then hit 3 or 4 more. And then that way you can hear him on your own. But if you got a buddy with you, yeah, push him off about 10 feet. He can hear it. But going back to my 3 favorite calls as a beginner, you know, woodsmanship's is half of it.
Uh-huh.
Knowing where they're at.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they like to go in a general direction every single morning. Well, 4 days in a row they went that way. So on day 5, go set your blind up and go set up that way. But they are turkeys. The day you do that, they go the other way. So, yeah. But, you know, you got to know. But, yeah, a box call is a great call to learn for a beginner. To get some simple yelps. The mouth call, I think, and this is all my opinions. Mm-hmm. Everybody hunts turkeys different. You know, I don't have no book or you know, you expect the unexpected, and they win 364 days a year. They win.
Yeah.
And the day you kill him, 365, the one day you kill him, well, he won the other 364 times. So, you know, nothing I'm saying is golden here.
Wait a minute. I've been waiting to say this for an hour. What was all that one in a million talk?
Oh, I love it.
Again. Again.
So you telling me there's a chance? Oh, that's awesome.
Well, and I mean, you know, the box call and the slate call, for me, that's pretty much all I'd be using because I shouldn't. Should I put this out there to our listeners? Am I going to get made fun of?
The fact that you can't use a diaphragm call?
I can't use a diaphragm call.
Well, a lot of people can't.
I got a severe gag reflex, and those don't work very well with me.
I got a joke. We're going to keep it PG.
You should have seen me when I first started elk hunting trying to – how much money do you think I spent
on a lot.
Diaphragms?
I don't know. Probably close to $60, $75 maybe.
In one setting.
Really?
Oh, boy.
More than that?
I bet I bought over a dozen different ones.
Oh, I didn't realize you
trying to get did. One that I could tolerate. Yeah. Yeah. It's just not going to happen for me.
Right.
So, you know, the box call, I think, especially for a beginner, like one like your pocket rocket,
mm-hmm.
do you think that would be a little easier to learn on than
yes.
maybe one of your larger ones?
A single-sided call is, you know, the like this pocket rocket. The mm-hmm. name says it all. It's a small call, fits in your pocket, but it's single-sided. So it's going to be a lot easier to learn and use than a double-sided, but you can do – there's advantages to each of them and disadvantages. You can only do so much on a one-sided call. You can do more on a double-sided call. And then I got the 12-inch long box. You can do it all on a 12-inch long box. Anything a turkey can do, you can do it on that. But the disadvantage is it's 12 inches long.
Yeah.
You got to pack that thing around. So, yeah.
I got to get my mind out of the gutter.
We better just gobble to that one. Yeah, everybody's different. I mean, come on here.
I think that would be, you know, big is how – well, and what's this other call that you showed us, by the way, when we first started? The
you haven't seen this one. This is a new one. This is a new, like I say, there's so much here. We can go
on
for
hours. That's not even this one here. You'll have
that's
to tell us about
that.
This one after.
Right, right. So what we've got, just to kind of – I know the viewers can't
see all this.
I've got several calls here laying here. I've got a scratch box. These have been around. They're as simple as you can get. And they have been around for 100-plus years. And then I've got box calls, miniature calls, slate call, glass call. You know, there's – And diaphragm calls here. But, yeah, to answer your question, finish that up real quick. To me, a box call is the easiest to learn, and you got a chance to kill a turkey. As long as you can perfect just a simple old 3- or 4-note yelp. And you're doing that every 15, 20 minutes. I mean.
It can happen.
It can happen.
Okay.
Right, right. So I think a box call is the easiest. You know, a glass and slate call's a little bit harder, and by far the hardest would be the diaphragm. But again, practice, practice, practice. I don't know how this will sound in the speaker, but learning to run a box call and a mouth call at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're telling that gobbler there's two of me over here.
Yeah,
two different ladies. But
which that always sounds better.
Well, I love my wife. She's my queen. I mean, you're running two calls there at the same time. You got two ladies over there to convince him to come in. But, yeah, mouth calls is the hardest. And like you said, if I had them, I would have $1,000. I have about 6 mouth calls that I like, and I have tried 200 of them.
Yeah.
In the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's
It can become almost an addiction. I mean, even after I spent all that money on the elk calls, on the diaphragm ones, then I spent a bunch of money on external diaphragms that I liked, didn't like. You know, I bet I got 4 or 5 bugle tubes that are never going to get used again because once I got it, there's certain things I didn't like about it and got a different one. Oh, I like this one better. Yeah. I mean, it can become a problem.
Just like anything else in the hunting industry.
Yep, that's for sure. But tell us about this little guy here.
This is just a call. I actually made it for the show 10 years ago, and it caught on. You know, Dad, it's all about selling money down at the show. Your booth costs $1,400. That's a lot of calls just to break even and come back home. So right. Dad walks up, and he wants this $70 call. And you got the youngster here pulling on Dad's shirt. I want one, too. I want one, too. Well, it's hard for Dad to pop on 2 calls. Plus, we're going to go out to eat, and we got to have gas money to get home, blah, 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 blah. So I made some little calls. So, you know, for $20, well, I'll buy Junior one of these. That way he can have fun playing it.
And they're cute.
Yeah, I mean, that's a neat little thing.
Yep. Right. So, you know, and the kid gets one, he's happy, as long as he's making a sound like Dad is. So that's kind of why I made it. But what happened is twofold here. I made this thing, and again, a lot of trial and error. These are the 2 wood combos I can get to work, and I've thrown 25 of these in the trash. But this call is the perfect. I named it the Lil Kiki. Because of the Kiki sound in the fall. The young hens are that when you're fall hunting, mm-hmm. and they'll do it in the spring too. I've killed some gobblers working the Kiki call in the spring. But this little call is perfect for kids. But believe me, I've sold 50 of them to adults.
Yeah.
Because it makes the little Kiki, which is one of the hardest sounds to make on a box call. But
real high pitched. Yeah.
That's what a young hen. And it's foolproof.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything special. You can do the Kiki on the 12-inch long box. Here's my favorite up in the contest in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I use to do that. Again, you can do so much on 12-inch long box for yelping, cutting, gobbling, but the Kiki run. So the little Kiki call was just for kids to have something to squawk on.
Mm-hmm.
Turned out to be an awesome key, you know, make the Kiki off of a box call that's foolproof. But here it is on a 12-inch long box. And that's Kiki run. But basically, Kiki run is I'm searching for mama. You know, she or him's calling out for mama. It's a Kiki call. But, yeah, that's what the little one is. And then a scratch box. Might as well hit it real quick. This call here was, these were made 100-plus years ago. It's just simply a small box of wood, and you hold a peg in your hand and strike the box across the peg. They call them scratch boxes. Scratch box. That was yelping and cutting that I was doing there.
You can almost hear the hollowness in that box.
Yep. That's a
that
good
sound
rollover.
Going up into it.
Right. That's a rollover yelp. And that's what you're looking for when you're calling a rollover yelp. You can hear it we'll use the 9-inch call. You'll hear it, eel. You want to start off high and come down low, especially for beginners using a box call. Going back to that, too, when you're any box call, not just mine, there's a center point. The box call is radiused, so there's a center point, and you're going to play just forward. Your first part of your note will be forward of center. That'll be the higher yee, and then when you go past the breaking point towards the back half, that's when you're going to hear the eel, eel. You can hear it high, low.
High, low, yeah.
Yeah.
It drops off. But and that's what a beginner needs to practice. Find the breaking point. You'll start a little before the breaking point and then bring it past it. So that's great. And as long as you can yelp, you got a chance at killing a bird. If you can yelp and throw in 50% of woodsmanship,
you got a dead bird.
You can kill something.
Yeah, you can kill something. Right. Picking up the little tips and tricks and the do's and the don'ts, and, you know, I don't move much. And what are you saying to that gobbler? And patience, like you say, you know, getting percentage more on your side.
Yeah.
To be the guy that's coming back with a gobbler every time.
Listening to Scott Wilper on the Missouri Woods and Water podcast. It is amazing, by the way. I know we've said this before, how closely, to me, related turkey hunting and elk hunting are.
I know.
I mean, a cow call, high-low. Just, yeah. It's the same. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's just crazy how similar they are.
Understanding the language, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. But, well, thanks for coming. I mean, this is a lot of great information. I've got all kinds of things that I learned that I'm hoping to use this year to be able to. I think, honestly, the biggest thing I took away from listening to Scott today was patience.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people are running and gunning because they got to be at work by 9 o'clock. Yeah. And so if.
And it's fine to run and gun, but try to get out of there without ruining the whole farm.
Right.
Yeah. You got to have the acres to play on to really mm-hmm. be able to put that to work.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you can run a gun and not get busted and still kill one.
Right.
You're I guess, playing roulette at that point, right?
Right, right.
So.
Well, one thing I want to do before we get off here, sounds like you're trying to wrap up. I want to tell our listeners, I'm going to play it on the box call here. I want to cut, cluck, purr, and then we'll end with a gobble.
Okay.
Just so
and they can hear them all together. Yeah.
And then I'll just put it all together at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But to go through it real quick, a yelp is 3 to 4 to 5. You don't have to count them. 3 to 5. It's about the rhythm. But 3 to 5 yelps, you're basically saying, "Hello, is anyone out there? Can you hear me? Everything's cool over here. Can anybody hear me?" You're reaching out. Is what you're doing. So that's going to be. Just a steady rhythm, 3, 4, 5 yelps right there. Then you've got the cut. A cut's a sharp. Always throw 3 or 4 yelps in with it. A cut can be a putt. A putt is a scared call. So you can hear the 5-second pause in between there. So when you're cutting, squeeze them in a little closer together.
Okay.
That's an excited. Now you're telling him I'm excited. So an excited cut, always throw yelps in with it. So there's yelping and cutting. Then you got the cluck. You play that on the back half of the box call. You want your paddle almost closed. And it's a lot deeper and not as loud. The hardest to do on a box call is purring. Basically, you're going to grind the lid. You're going to grind the lid on them. I don't know how that's coming out on this. But a purr is a feeding call. So you're trying to convince this gobbler, again, you're reading his snood. It's straight up and down. It ain't hanging down. He's scared. You're trying to convince him, come on, 10 more yards, step around that bush, it's okay.
There's food over here.
Yeah, I'm feeding, there's no danger. So purring and clucking. So that's a purr. You know, that's great to calm him down. To purr. That's just a little pop with the lid almost closed. So that's kind of what you can do, and then you can gobble on him. But to bring it all together, it sounds something. You know, I wouldn't do this all together, but. Boom! And that's how you do it.
Pow, right in the kisser.
But no, there's a lot to it. I mean, what we've covered on this show, Nate, Micah,
I can go on for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah. And we could go on listening to you.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I haven't even touched into the difference between slate, glass, aluminum, how to clean them, how to condition them. You know, we talked a little bit about that. You know, box calls are the same way. Since we were all kind of more on box calls, you know, you need to chalk the paddle. I use orange chalk. Blue chalk will work, so will brown. Orange is kind of my favorite. There isn't any grease in it. And then you actually have the sound, the top of the sound part of the box, the soundboard, that is the holy zone right there. You don't want to rub your fingers over. You don't want oil, grease, dirt on it. I mean, you don't touch it. It is wood. Take Ziploc bags with you in the woods. Keep them clean. Use a sock. I take black socks with me. I just, you know, I'll go to Walmart and buy black socks. All my calls are in black socks, my slate and pot calls. You know, it's a great way to protect them. But
probably keeps them a little quieter, too, when you're moving around.
Right, when they're moving around, it kind of keeps them quiet. But, yeah, we can go on for hours. You know, we haven't even touched the surface. But
I think that from a tips and tactics standpoint, I think that listener can get a lot from what we listened to today.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that goes into calls, too, that, yeah, we didn't even touch. But I will probably listen to this several times now.
Oh, definitely.
Because I'm already thinking of things Scott said earlier that I'm like, no, how did he say that? Because I'm going to do pretty much exactly what you tell me.
Try to read the gobbler.
So if it goes bad,
don't call me. Don't blame me if it went bad.
We just need to take him with us. That's what we need to do.
Just call me.
Scott.
I had a guy 2 years ago call me at 6:30 in the morning. I'm at work. Hey, I bought a call from you 3 years ago. You don't know my name, but I'm on a gobbler right now. He's giving me play by play, but I enjoyed it. I loved it. I thought it was cool.
About two hours
later, he killed the bird, you know. Nice. I wasn't on the phone with him that long, but.
That's awesome.
Yeah. To wrap Dumb and Dumber right back into this, you know, if I'm screwing up, our pets' heads are falling off.
We hope they do. We hope the heads fall off this goer.
Scott, thanks for coming on, man. We really appreciate your time. Before we jump off, tell everybody how they can get a hold of Whooper Custom Calls if they do want to order a call. Obviously, it's by the time they hear this, it's going to be last second, and they might not get one before season.
Right.
But,
I'm 12 calls backed up right now. Mm-hmm. So with the time I do get it done, it depends on what you order, but it would be middle of season to the end of the season by the time you got it. But, Whooper Custom Calls on Facebook. You'll see my phone number there, and I'm not into the fancy computer stuff. I mean, I still call it Book of Faces, Face Pamphlet, and stuff like this. But, yeah, the kids say it's Facebook. Well, then it's Facebook.
Get on
Facebook, and you'll see my number there. Give me a call, and I'll make you whatever you want to what you want. You know, big box, pocket rocket, what kind of wood, high pitch, low pitch. Just it's easier for me to talk to somebody and get a feel for what they want.
Right.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we're looking at a handful of them right now. And, I mean, they're pieces of art. I mean, it's not like those ones that you go buy off the shelf and stuff like
nothing
that.
Nothing against them.
Nothing wrong with them or nothing. But these, I mean, you're buying I don't know how close they are to each one, if you make one the exact same or whatnot. But I'm sure they all got a little bit of different to them.
And they do.
You know,
they're not mass-produced. They're handmade.
Right. Handmade here. I mean, they look awesome. They're awesome calls. So,
yep. So, Scott, thank you again, sir.
Oh, I've had fun. I love it.
We'll talk at you later. Give us one more gobble on the way out. See ya. Folks, we are back.
We got really excited. And so, after we put all the stuff up, Scott came up with, or he had a trick up his sleeve, and he's like, I'm going to mess with those guys. I'm going to give them the really good stuff once they stop recording. But luckily, we talked him into doing it.
And he's like, oh, I forgot this.
Yeah.
So this is a Missouri Woods and Water first.
Yeah.
We are coming back on because we got to talking after we stopped recording, and Scott did something that I've never even thought to even try to mimic.
Right.
And he did it, and he had us close our eyes.
And he painted that picture.
And tell us what it, you know, actually sounded like. And so, Scott, tell us what you did and what you're trying to mimic, and then we'll have you actually do it. And it I mean, it sounds just like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the all the listeners here, it's a good thing because, you know, we're not video. Like, I had you all close your eyes. So, listening, this is just this will work perfect. You know, in the morning, I do it throughout the day also. But I have a wing. It's just a gobbler I killed. I took a bunch of feathers. I used Carbondo, made a handle. But it's kind of my wing. I beat it on my leg. I use it to scratch the leaves. Again, you got to add realism. You've got to paint a Picasso. You've got to convince this gobbler this is the real deal. So you're putting every paint stroke on this picture you can possibly do. So a wing works real good to scratch the leaves, but also they stretch their wings all day long. Just, you know, I'll beat this wing on a tree next to me or limb or my leg, mm-hmm. and you know, five or six times they're stretching their wings. You're adding realism to the picture. But what we got all excited about before we broke and have to break everything back out here.
I just got done putting stuff up, and I Scott did it, and I said, we've got to record that. That was amazing.
Yeah, that sounded
because
too good.
Because in the morning, you know, the crack of light, he's gobbling his head off, and you're trying to paint this Picasso picture for him to make him fly your way and come down is realism. Don't be the person that just yelp, yelp, yelp every 20 minutes and I hope it's going to happen. Add some realism to it. So I did this for the fellas here, and they got all pumped up, and so did I. So anyway, what I'm doing is a fly-down cackle, and I do this every single morning, whether I'm on a bird or not. You got a lot of gobblers that don't gobble.
Yeah.
I've killed a dozen gobblers that didn't gobble. Came all the way to the gun silent. So it works for them, too. You're adding realism to this picture. So every single morning I do a fly-down cackle, and especially the birds that are hot and bothered in the tree, he will double and triple gobble to this. But when a hen is on the limb and she's getting ready to leave, she'll start cutting. It's a sharp cut. You know, it's kind of a sporadic rhythm. And then when she jumps off the limb in flight, her pace slows down, and it gets a little softer before her feet hits the ground. And I take my wing and beat my leg or limb that's next to me as she's coming off the tree down to the ground. And when that gobbler can't see what's going on and he hears all that, I mean, that is the final stroke on the Picasso. Most of the time can get him to break to come your way.
He now is positive.
He is positive. You are the real deal. You know, from the tree yelp, the soft tree yelp in the morning to, you know, you let out a couple hard yelps to let him know you're there right before fly down. And then now you're actually laying the fly down cackle on him. So here it is. Hope it comes out good.
Yeah. Well, I have no idea how it's going to come out, but it's going to sound good to us.
So basically she just flew out, she hit the ground, she lets out two or three yelps once her feet hits the ground to say, hey, I made it, and I don't see any danger. So if you could, I don't know how that's going to come out, but that was on a mouth call. Here it is on the box call.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, that's nice.
So that's a fly down cackle, and that really could be the deal breaker for him to come your way.
And you don't need a turkey wing with Bondo on the end of it. You can use a bread sack.
Yes, a bread sack.
Scott even got a bread sack out and did the same thing. It sounded the exact same.
I've done put the bread in there. Yes, an old timer, 25 years ago, told me to get a bread sack. Hold both ends of it, and you kind of close your hands like you're going to clap and bring them back out, and you can make that bread sack sound just like a wing.
Beating. And it did.
Yeah.
It did, especially when you close your eyes and you try to picture it. It did sound just like what you would think.
I never realized. I've heard that sound before, but I wasn't even thinking about that. And then I did. I closed my eyes. I was like, Yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah,
right. And that's adding realism to the situation. So
that's amazing.
But, you know, and it breaks it down to, you know, just not a fly-down cackle, but just scratching the leaves as you're purring and clucking. You're telling that gobbler, everything's safe over here. I'm feeding. Come on in. You know, purring and clucking, but scratch the leaves with it, you know?
Yeah. So. You are part of our first ever bonus segment, I guess we'll call it. I don't know.
We're going to call it the bonus.
It's probably our last one we'll ever have.
Yeah.
But, hey, I we heard that. We had to have the listeners hear that.
Yeah, that's a good little tip right there.
You know, if you get nothing else from this show, I know we already said it, but Scott is big on you are wanting to paint a picture to that gobbler. This is what I am. And make him think there is nothing else that it is. This is, you know, you're not just every 15 minutes clucking and then every 15 minutes clucking after that. You actually make him think this is exactly what I am.
Paint the picture.
It makes a lot of sense, especially if you're a patient hunter that isn't sitting there running around all day. You know, it's, I want to be patient. I want you to come to me, right? And
that's
it,
right.
It works.
Absolutely.
So thanks again. That was an awesome bonus. I hope the listeners enjoyed it.
Just when you think you couldn't totally screw it up anymore, you totally go and redeem yourself.
You go and do something like this.
This baby gets 50 miles totally. Per gallon. All right, thanks, listeners. I just had to throw that in there.
Thanks, Scott. See you, man.
Appreciate it.
All right, you tried gobbling at the beginning. Now let's see if you're any better. Nope. Still just as bad.
It's still
you're silent. A lost cause just like me.
Yeah.
Hope everybody enjoyed that.
I'm sure they got something out of it. I know I did.
Yeah, that was great. I really enjoy sitting down with Scott. Honestly, I'd probably do an episode with him like every other week if I could on just any topic. I mean, smoking meat. He's smoking trout outside right now.
Yeah, that's
right. We could really get after it with Scott.
Yeah, he well-versed.
Yep. So we had a lot of fun with him. We appreciate him opening his home up to us again. Sitting here looking at all the stuff that makes me feel inadequate. Not just turkey, but
yeah,
hey.
Quite a few good deer, some bobcat on the wall. Yeah, lots of good animals.
He knows how to hunt.
Yes.
Let's just say that, right? Yeah. So we appreciate him coming on. Make sure that if you're listening to this now and you're just now thinking about buying a turkey call, you're probably a little late to the game, but you know, looking into next year.
I would still go ahead and give him a call because he obviously does get backed up and, you know, it's better to have it, you know, come January or whenever he finishes it, that way you got it next season ready to go.
Yeah, and he makes a plethora of different calls, box calls, there's different sizes, you know, slate calls. He makes a lot of different stuff, so check him out, Wilbur Custom Calls on Facebook. That's the only thing he's got, and I respect that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yep, no website, nothing, just Facebook and a phone number, and I think he's got Facebook because of his daughter anyway. So hopefully we got some more turkey stuff coming up before season starts or during.
I'm sure we can get some.
We're still looking at stuff, but you know, if not before season, good luck to everybody. I'm going to try my best to get out there.
I was talking to my buddies. One of my buddies is going up north and stuff, and I was talking to another guy that good buddy of mine, Jacob Swiskin, was like, dude, we really need to go up north and try to shoot some birds in the face.
Yeah.
And then I got to thinking, I'm like, my baby is due right when turkey season starts, so I don't know if it's going to happen or not for me. I'm going to try real hard, you know. Maybe I can get out a few mornings local or something.
And it's similar, not a baby, but it's similar stuff for me. Caden, Kylie, and Chase are all starting baseball and softball.
Yeah.
And this time of year goes crazy for me. There's basically a tournament every weekend, and I really don't have solid turkey spots. I'm hoping maybe the one spot we talked about in the episode does show something, but who knows, you know.
And that's kind of similar to mine with these new spots. I've had a few pictures of turkey, and one of the first hunts I did out there, I saw a turkey, but I don't think they're crawling with turkeys, I guess. I don't know. I talked to the landowner the other day. He actually sent me a picture. He had 14 deer out in the alfalfa already feeding. Still had antlers on, by the way, two of them.
Yeah.
Two little 6-points. But I was asking about turkeys. He said, they haven't showed up yet. He's like, they usually do show up, but he hasn't seen any yet.
Yeah, we're recording this, actually. You said that. Scott's brother and one of my best buddies, Jeff, sent me a picture. This is March 29th. I think the photo was from March 28th or 27th. Little basket. Still have both sides on them.
Must have been a good year for everybody.
Yeah.
As far as nutrition goes.
But nonetheless, good luck to everybody. If we don't have anything else before turkey season, go kill some thunder chickens and we'll hop off.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
See ya.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.